want to invite John Pallister from the Walsingham School in the United Kingdom. And he will give us an overview about a certain social software, the ePortfolio. And he argues that the using of ePortfolio has a potential to support the training of the trainers. So, John, you have the, or Mr. Pallister, you have the floor.
Hi, all. I hope you're all hearing me. It's not quite snowing in County Durham, but it's very cold here. So I'm sat in a small cupboard in Walsingham in the UK talking to folks from all around the world. Some of you I've met face to face. Some I've talked to via blogs. Some I've had email conversations with. But I'm sat here and I've got this ability to talk to you. I can't see the whites of your eyes. I can't judge whether you're still with me, whether you need some other strategy, or whether I need to use some other strategy to engage you. So I'm sat here and I think I'm talking to you. I hope you can hear me. I've got nothing in the chat room to tell me that you can't hear me or that you can hear me. So I'm a teacher. I'm a trainer. Things around me are changing. I never thought I'd be sat in a cupboard talking to myself talking to half of Europe. Things are changing for all trainers, for all of yourselves. And I think we've just heard somebody talking there about the revolutionary trainer and the revolution which is about to happen around us as trainers. Okay, so I'll start. Do I have control of the slides, Christina? No. Yes, yes. Oh, yes, I do. So I've control
yes,
of the slides.
Have.
Off we go. Yes, I've got them. I'm in business. So I need to go through some of the background. Some of this background you'll have worked through yesterday in much more detail. But really what I'm talking about here is the setting, what we need to think about before we start to think about the portfolio. So the situation we're in, there's more demand for training to equip the employees or our employees for a competitive and a rapidly changing world. There's a need to harness the new and the emerging technologies. We don't know what technology is around the corner. We've got to have the mindset that, yes, we're going to use it. We're going to take it on board. We're going to make sure that we get the most out of it. And there's a change in demands of the jobs. We need to retrain people who are already in jobs. My generation, I've been a teacher for 30-odd years, a trainer for nearly as many. I don't think I will change my job role at this point. But a lot of the people that we are training now will change 5, 6, however many times in their working life. There is a demand for evidence that shows that employees can do things, and specifically that they've got the generic skills and competencies. And in the UK, that would mean something along the lines of functional skills, employability skills, citizenship, learning and thinking skills, vocationally specific skills. Are you still with me? Are you asleep? The skills list goes on. And then there's that other thing that I've just heard you talking about, for access to anywhere, anytime training. And yes, the training could go on in the lunch hour. And obviously, advantages and disadvantages there. And I've lost my slide. There we go again. Off we go to the next one. So there's an increasing demand for skills. They need to be able to do something to be able to function. I'll come back to that one, Graham. I see you on there. I'll try and find something in a few minutes. and the skills issue. Perhaps we'll discuss that towards the end. 15 minutes, not a lot of time. So if it's okay with you, perhaps if I rattle through this presentation and then we have the discussion towards the end. Thanks, Graham. So the pace of development often requires skills and competencies to do evidence faster than the new qualifications. Okay, so the qualifications can't keep up with the skills and competencies that our trainees are expected to have to be able to perform in their jobs. Okay, so for example, people working with the new technologies, I'm sat here, an old man, working with a new technology. I have no qualifications in it, and I've had to pick it up somewhere. I've had to pick up some training, and now I'm trying to help others to do that. We're working in different ways. We need to train people to work in these ways, and we need evidence that shows that the employee can. So the background, rapidly evolving practice, information and communication technology. We're back to that again. I know it's been a major function of the past couple of days. We've got these mobile technologies. I look on Twitter and I'm very envious. Half the world seems to be twittering from mobile devices. Half the world is asking, where am I? I'm lost in some town in some country I've never even heard of. And people are running to support them. I need some information, etc. The technologies are all coming together. The converging technologies, pervasive, invasive, they're everywhere. We can't escape from them. But then we've got the online environments. We've got the tools, the spaces, and the communities. And that's what we'll really explore as we rattle through this. So as a trainer, we work in many different ways. A month ago, I was working with 100 people in an ever so pleasant seaside hotel. Last week, I was working with 10 people in an airport training room. Today, I'm talking to 35 people from goodness knows where. So I'm having to adapt. Trainers are having to adapt. The places we work in, we've always been used to walking out of one establishment into a workplace and picking it up from there. But we're now having to deal with this online bit as well. So what do we do as trainers? We facilitate, we support, we mentor, we coach, we teach, and the list goes on. It's quite a job. It's a challenging and evolving role, probably hence the reason for these courses. But whatever the situation we work in, we need to find out what the learner already knows or can do, then somehow engage them, get their interest, retain their interest, and challenge and motivate, and then somehow support them. Now, I'm finding it quite difficult here. I don't know whether you've gone to sleep, whether you're having a cup of tea, where you've turned off completely. I've not used any graphics on this screen to engage you, and I'm getting no feedback, but I'm continuing to talk. Okay, so do I know what you already know? Well, for some of you, I do. I've had a quick look out there. I've looked at the blog posts. I've followed people in Twitter. I've popped into Second Life every now and then. So I know a few people. But 75% of the people on this list, I do not know. So I don't know whether you can understand what I'm doing. I don't know, what I'm saying. I don't know whether I'm making my point clearly. So I can't see that in this environment. So I've got to engage you somewhere. I've then got to get you interest. Well, I can do that by clapping my hands or whatever it is. Then I've got to somehow support you. Quite a job. But our trainees, our learners, the people that we work with, well, they're used to working environments that really require them to use ICT. They might be more ICT literate than last time I went to the Second Life, I got lost. So we'll do it again. So our students work in different environments. They're used to using ICT. They've probably got more skills than we have. But we still need to base what it is we train our students in what they already know. Okay, so their trainees expect to use ICT in all aspects of the work. It's a natural thing for them to do. They carry around their iPhones. They carry around these G1 things. They carry around cameras, music. They're dripping with technology. But they want to communicate. They want to use the blogs. They want chat rooms, text messaging, voice. They want the lot. Things that we might not be au fait with. Another change. So they want to play. Now, I put the word play in there, and I'm sure a lot of you will pull me to bits on that one. They want to play on computer and internet games. Increasingly, they've got digital identities. And they've got ICT-based social networks, etc. The message there is, we as trainers are living in a rapidly evolving situation, as are our learners. So an e-portfolio, where does this thing come from? What is it about? Many, many different definitions for these e-portfolios. We've got some digital evidence. And somewhere in there, I've tried to pull out what I think is the core elements of the e-portfolio. It's digital evidence, and that evidence is owned by the learner. It's structured and stored in some way so they can find it, so they can present it, and they can share it with others, whoever those others need to be or whoever it is appropriate to be. Evidence stored in this e-portfolio is likely to include evidence of skills and competencies, plans, aspirations, achievement, learning experiences, etc. Now, that list of things we're wanting to store there are things that most teachers would like their learners to store anyway. So we've got here an e-portfolio. The thing I'm starting to run on to talk about now, the e-portfolio is simply a portfolio of digital evidence owned and managed by the learner. So that's my bit about the e-portfolio. But what's more important, really, is the process that surrounds or supports the e-portfolio process. There's lots and lots of talk out there about the tools and the technology. Ever so interesting discussions going on. But it's the process that the learners need to go through when they use the e-portfolio, which is the important bit. And that process, there's nothing really new with it. It's a process that's solidly embedded and supports assessment for learning. That's formative assessment. It's a process that encourages learners to look at their own learning. And I think that point came up yesterday. You want learners to look at their learning strategies, how they are learning, their progress, etc. Okay? A process that encourages the learner to become reflective. So if we just go around the diagram I have on the screen at the moment, the learner needs to recognize that they need to learn something. They need to plan somewhere. That could be a formal plan, it could be an informal plan, but basically they've got to think about how they're going to actually do the job. Often they would check and share their plan with somebody. Now that could be an opportunity to record something in a portfolio. They get on and do it, whatever it is they're planning to do. Then they record evidence of what they've done. Reason for that, we'll come back to later. They'll review and reflect. The important stage, they need to review and reflect on what they've done. And then they need to select and link the evidence that they might want to share with others. And so we go on. So we've got the plan, do, review process there. Fundamental to a lot of learning, and all we're really missing in there, or all we're adding with the e-portfolio process, we're adding in that little requirement for them to store it. So we're wanting them to store it. Where are we wanting to store it? We're wanting them to store it in a digital form. Now, thinking back to our learners want to use digital methods. They want to use digital tools. So we're not placing any great burden on them to ask them just to store evidence of what they've done, their plans, etc., in a digital fashion. Okay, so the process is the most important part. So if you can see your way through all of the discussions, watch the timing. Oh, I must watch the time again. Yes, okay. So what we need to do, and what's in it for the learner? So if we're looking at the learner, it provides a good basis for new training. So if you're starting to plan any of your training, we mentioned earlier that the starting point, the basis for any new learning is what the learner already knows. Okay, and that helps the learner, that helps us to understand what the learner can do. John Pallister stuff at 12:05 received. It helps the trainer to understand what the learner can do and has done. It can encourage them to take an active part in their own learning. And it can encourage the reflection, the planning, the dialogue about learning. It can also encourage them to be creative in the use of media. It places the learner at the center of the learning process, and that really is supporting the personalized learning bit. It can motivate, and it can raise learner self-esteem. This progression, supporting progression is important. We need to be able to support our learners, our trainees, as they move on through their lifelong learning journey and their employment journey, or whatever we're going to call it. And if we've got evidence of what a learner has done, that evidence can always be used as part of a review process, whether it's a salary review, a performance review, or whether it's a review situation where they're applying for a new position or new training opportunities. Okay. Now, if we look at the last point there, this e-portfolio, this digital evidence that belongs to the learner, it can be stored anywhere. It can be hosted online. Okay, and that can support dialogue and formative assessment. But that's not dialogue just in a room, in a classroom, in a training room. That's dialogue anywhere in the world. I'll finish it very shortly. So just back to the slide there, we've got learning, and what we're about as trainers is learning, supporting, encouraging, promoting learning. That learning can be promoted and supported by the e-portfolio process. Now, underneath all of that, look, you've got the tools and the technology. Okay. Now, what we need as trainers to be doing is to be looking at embedding the process into what we do, embedding the process into our practice. Okay, so the main message from that lot. So we need to focus on the learning and not on the tools. The tools and technology, the only certainty is that they will in fact change. Life-wide hosting, interoperability, all that type of stuff, interesting stuff, vital stuff, but concentrate on what's the learning. If the e-portfolio process has value, why not use it now? Why not harness the available technology? Okay, now if we rattle away through now and look at this one. How can the e-portfolio process support us, the professional development of the trainers? We've looked briefly there in the past 10 minutes or so, or was it 15 minutes? Time flies. We've looked briefly at how the e-portfolio process can support our learners, the trainees. But what about us as trainers? It can help us to evidence our competence. It can help us to provide the outcomes that people need to evidence that they can do something. Perhaps they are the person to be employed on this training task, a training assignment. It can support our own professional development. And that is us, the trainers, as learners. And it can support us with our reflective practice. Of course, as soon as I've finished here, I will go away and I will straight away update my e-portfolio saying, well, look, giving an online presentation makes you sweat a little and you have to be conscious of the time. So that's my reflective practice. And back to Barry, I don't think at this point I'll be able to load an e-portfolio, but we'll talk about that in a moment. It can support my progression into new jobs, support my progression through reviews, etc. And of course, if the e-portfolio is going to be used by our learners, if we've been through the e-portfolio process, if we understand it, if we're committed to it, it will help us to support our learners. Okay, so for me, I've got 1 minute left. Any questions?
Okay, Graham?
I hadn't, but I have now. John, that was brilliant stuff. I love it. I think that presentation should be put out all over the place. The question I suppose for you is, you work in, I've been to the school where you work, and it's quite a traditional post-secondary school. How does the use of all the ideas you've got about how learning should take place integrate within with your school management and with your school curriculum?
Yes, we are in quite a traditional school, a developing school, and for the past 5 years, we have been working with e-portfolios, with learners aged from 7 to 19. So we've got quite a lot of experience in there, lots of successes, lots of failures. We've learned a lot, and we've learned about how to progress. We tried to bring it in with the sixth form, did a lot of testing up there, but then we realized we need to bring it in from the bottom. So one of the messages I can put out there in the last minute or so is that really you have to plan for the introduction of e-portfolios. There's a lot on offer for trainees with the e-portfolio, especially in vocational areas. We're coming from the school's point of view and we're looking at it in terms of supporting their learning, supporting reflective learning. Okay. So, as Graham puts up in the chat room, we were involved with the MOSF project. So if you go to www.mosf.org, there's a superb report there written by a chap called Atwell and others, which goes through a lot of the background to e-portfolios and does address a lot of the vocational elements that you'll be interested in. I finished with my presentation. I'll just take questions. There was a question earlier on about can I load an e-portfolio at this point in time. I don't think I can do that easily in the little bit of time I've got left.
Okay, thank you, John, for your presentation. Are there any questions to John?
Look, John, I liked a lot your presentation. We also work with portfolios here in my school in Portugal. The thing is that sometimes we feel it like a Trojan horse or something. When it gets in the walls, you're probably it's difficult to deal with all of them. When you have 120 or 130 students and you're dealing with portfolios and you have messages and works and written essays and podcasts and whatever in their portfolios every week, I do know it's the most interesting way of learning, but it's quite difficult, if not impossible, to keep up with them. Do you have the same problem?
Yes, I like the idea of the Trojan horse. And I think that's a very useful idea. In fact, in one of my slides that I missed out, we have the very concept of the Trojan horse. I think the e-portfolio is a really, really good way to start to prepare a school, to start to prepare an organization, to use all of the social software tools which are out there. Because by looking at the e-portfolio process, they've got to consider the digital identity. They've got to consider who they're going to share information with. They've got to consider whether it's appropriate to use a podcast, a video podcast, whether it's appropriate just to put down a scanned image. So as a Trojan horse, I think the e-portfolio can help other people to get into the online stuff that we're perhaps wanting them to get into. And on the second point, yes, it's very, very difficult and very, very demanding, but I do see students really gaining from it. I see them learning from it, but we still have a long way to go with the learning in terms of using e-portfolio.